today is, of course, the 20th anniversary of the death of the great Rory Gallagher. Blues rock musician, multi-instrumentalist, especially guitar legend. Anyway, he was born in Donegal, as you know, but he lived most of his life. He went very young to Cork, and that's where he's most celebrated on a day like today, and in fact over the weekend as well. The former Lord Mayor of Cork, by a day, that is, Mary Shields, is on the line now to tell us what's going on down south by way of remembering Rory this weekend. Mary, welcome to the programme.
Good morning. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you too. Now, I believe it was really Friday when an awful lot of things happened in terms of the Bells of Shandon, in terms of all the radio stations playing Tattooed Lady, and I think Larry was just telling me he's going to be playing in about an hour, and we're going to have loads of Rory Gallagher in this hour as well. But just, what does, do you think, Rory Gallagher's legacy mean to the people of Cork? He died 20 years ago today.
He did. He died very young. I suppose he died at the peak of his career, really. But people in Cork are very proud of Rory Gallagher. You know, we have to be proud of somebody who was the world's, one of the world's finest rock musicians and guitarists, and if not the best. And of course, in Cork, we like to say we're all the best. You know that. But anyway, the 20th anniversary of the death of Rory. And Friday, it was great fun. Cork was on fete, remembering Rory Gallagher, as you already mentioned. The whole city was full of it, and in all the radio stations, they all played the same hit tune at 1:10 in the afternoon, called Tattoo Lady, and this went out to all the businesses and all the houses throughout the city and county. And there were also street events with large crowds gathered. For example, Rory Gallagher Place on Paul Street. Many people came from all over the world as well to mark the occasion, which was great for Cork as well. We love to see visitors coming, and particularly remembering Rory. Now, of course, I think the one nicest thing was the ringing of the Shandon bells at the same time. And that was interesting insofar as that was, they were rung by Owen, who's Rory's nephew.
All right, and I believe that the bells actually played Tattoo Lady.
They did. Rory played them on the bell, played that particular tune on the bells. So it was great fun. And Joe, his brother, was here as well. And, of course, one thing I'm very proud of is that the Camden Place Hotel, which is an arts centre and a very iconic building indeed in Cork, it's right across the river from the Opera House. And that the inauguration of the Rory Gallagher Music Studio took place there on Saturday.
All right, okay. You up to yesterday, or the day before, was it, were the Lord Mayor of Cork, right?
That's that right.
Okay, up till this weekend. So did you notice during your tenure that that there's much tourism generated in Cork by Rory's reputation?
I can't say I did notice it. I became very much aware of it coming up towards the anniversary. And I'm not of the age of Rory Gallagher, by the way, in case you know. I was a little bit before that time, quite a bit before the time. But I'll tell you one thing I do know is that when I go out to the cemetery to visit my brother-in-law's grave, which is quite near, people are always at Rory's grave saying a little prayer. And it's there right on the pathway, and a very interesting headstone as well. So it's a great thing that people do remember Rory here with great love and great affection.
Okay, well then finally, just a minute, this is since you've come across it lately, particularly in terms of an anniversary and you hear so much about it, is there any way you could encapsulate, or do you think, you know, what is it about Rory that people loved so much, particularly in Cork?
I believe he was huge in so far as he gave hugely of himself to his audiences. He was very animated on stage. He worked very, very hard. And of course, his wonderful talent, and thankfully that it was recognised and that people appreciated it. And I think this weekend's activities showcase that really very much, that people did love him.
And Mary, this weekend's activities, is there anything happening specifically today? I know the big day really was Friday in Cork, but is there anything happening today?
I think actually today is really the, date-wise, is actually the anniversary. I honestly don't know that. Right. I think most of the activities took place on Friday and Saturday, and probably that was a good thing.
On Sunday, today the Arts Centre is going to inaugurate its recording and rehearsal studio on Campden Quay, which is named after the guitar great, and will feature previously unseen photographs and memorabilia, etc.
That's right.
Right, indeed. Yeah. And there's also the 20th anniversary takes place, organised by Cork City Council and Camden Palace Hotel Community Arts Centre.
I'm delighted too that Cork City Council are involved, because Cork City Council support the arts very well, and it's great that that space has been made available in the Camden Palace Hotel for Rory's memorabilia. And indeed, more importantly, I think, is the fact that there's a space there now where young guitarists, can go down and practice and that sort of thing, rehearse. And that's very important that we have that space for them as well.
All right, indeed. Well, listen, Mary, thank you very much. What are you going to do now? Like, do you get a certain amount of time and then you get booted out? Is that it?
No, I have plenty to do, I can assure you. I'm still on the Cork City Council for the next 4 years. So that's the first thing. And I need to do my garden and I need to give a little time to myself too, because being Lord Mayor of Cork is a huge privilege and a huge honour, but a very onerous task and takes up a lot of time. And I'm glad to get my time back again and have finished.
A very onerous task. Well, listen, congratulations and thank you very much indeed, Mary. Mary Shields, it is the former Lord Mayor of Cork. If I'd been talking to you 3 days ago, it would have been the Mayor of Cork.
Okay, thanks
a million. Good luck. Take it easy. Okay,
bye-bye.
We're going to go for a break and then we'll see what happens after that. We're going to do more Rory Gallagher stuff because Dan, through the years, interviewed Rory many times in the programme. One of the best ones was in a live programme. No, we didn't do this bit live. We spent a whole day with him in Candlelock in London doing a thing for Channel 4. He was one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet, but every time you interview him, in fact, he was the nicest guy. He really was. Very gentle man. But the worst thing was, every time he interviewed him, he always felt it was an intrusion because he really just wanted to get up there on stage and do his thing. And in fact, a sad end in some ways, because we had Donald on one time and he, you know, not a nice story at the end of just, he was a bit of a lonely guy at the end of it all, Rory. But I must say his music, especially the first bunch of albums, fantastic. So we'll do a bit of all of that. Now, at the age of 47, he died 20 years ago today. Rory Gallagher, we're going to take a look at just, we'll go back to one of the interviews that he did. He was in many times in the studio doing bits and pieces. In fact, I'll play a little piece when he actually just picks up the guitar and we put on a little bit of the old echo and reverb stuff and Wilson out there on the controls and fantastic. But before I get to that, I'll just another little bit, or some bits of Rory talking. Before we do that, might as well play a little bit of Rory music. And what's better than On the Boards, Taste, and the opening track on it? What's Going On is what it's called. That's Taste from the second album from them, which is called On the Boards, and that is, of course, Rory Gallagher. He went solo after that. In fact, the first thing he did after that was the solo album called Rory Gallagher, which I think is still his best. Fantastic. We'll play a bit of music in a minute or two, but we're going to go back to just one of the interviews from 88 Direction, okay? So I'll just sort of press the button and see what part we're at, because really I'm just going to dip in and out. Wow, my voice sounds different. Listen to this.
It was always blues-based. It was always the word blues mentioned with Rory Gallagher. I mean, the first Taste album, Sugar Mama, everything.
Oh, God, I sound terrible. 51552 is our text.
68. Whatever.
Yes.
So, and then On the Boards, the second one. So what about the idea of the fact that if you were roped in the early 70s with the Deep Purples, etc., on another level, which you were as well, a hard rock or whatever you want to call it, even free, whatever, that nowadays that hard rock or metal or whatever is a lot different the way than it used to be, even though there's still a huge audience out there for all types of metal. I mean, for instance, do you think that a lot of the metal type bands that you would see on MTV and all the explosions on stage and the tight loon pants and the ludicrous sort of way they have to go on, that's just de rigueur now for the metal bands, do you think that you want the fans to go to them to look at you as well because you're playing good hard rock as well?
Well, I mean, I'd like people to say, well, he plays the toughest rock around, but he does it with the minimum of frills, and I want to play tough blues as well. The problem with heavy metal is that it, you know, you have the heavy metal side of, say, I mean, I think it ends with the Rolling Stones, because they still have, you know, they put on a ridiculous visual show, but they still have the credible music. And say Free were a good band, and a few others, but then it was a glut of bands with all the cliched metal things, and then the smoke bombs, the chains, and the videos always, you know, driving the Rolls Royce straight into the swimming pool and all that. It's fun, but I don't know. It is just over the top. It doesn't mean anything.
Do you think a lot of it is just basic sort of like wild pop music? It's got nothing to do with the real thing or whatever that might be.
Well, I mean, if you want to be very fair to say, some of the metal bands, I mean, some of the fantastic hard drummers really kick up a storm, and they're fairly raunchy guitarists, but they're tied bit by bit. They become tied to the sort of the routine, which you could apply to any rock band. But at least if you leave yourself a few avenues open, you don't have to. Everything doesn't have to be a big riff number, and everything doesn't have to be, you know, Hall of the Mountain King of rock and roll. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't mind. You know, a good hard rock band. Say Lizzie, for instance, were bordering on metal, but at least they were doing songs and it was well played, and it had more than just a one dimension. But I don't know, it's to each his own. But I think the less gimmickry, the better, you know, and try and make it as down home as possible.
What about Lizzie? Did you know Phil Lynott well?
Fairly well. Well, I played with him a couple of... I jammed with him in Cologne, and then we did a thing at Punch and Stone.
That's right, you had the Hot Press thing, yeah.
And I bumped into him a few times over the years, and never had really long chats or anything, but just, you know. And I knew Brian Downey a wee bit, and Scott and all those. But I wasn't a close friend or anything, but I just crossed paths, is the only way I could put it.
And when you go to America now, these days, do you hear a lot about you too?
Sure enough, naturally. I mean, if you're in front of Time magazine, what can you do? I mean, they are well known, doing very well. Yeah.
Do you know them at all?
I know a wee bit. I haven't seen them for a while now, but they did a gig with us in Aylesbury or somewhere years ago, and I met them in London. I met them here at some function or two functions, but I haven't seen them for a while. I know them a wee bit, but I don't, you know, know very well.
What kind of music do you listen to? I mean, like, would you listen to any of the metal bands around? Would you listen to U2? Would you listen to Lizzie albums if you went home now tonight or what?
I listen to a few U2 tracks or a few Lizzie tracks. I'd listen to Pogues tracks. I'd listen to a variety. I'd listen to a country track. But the main stable diet day-to-day for me is like R&B or blues or rock and roll. But I'm not ultra sort of narrow-minded about it, you know.
And when you say like all that, like do you listen to things like Buddy Guy and Junior Wales and Muddy Waters and Blind Boy Fuller and Big Bill Brunsey and the whole list and still, yeah, all the time?
Absolutely, yeah. You've got to, I want to sort of, you get to a certain point in your life where you have to really beat this European blues stigma, which was connected to, say, with Fleetwood Mac and Blue Horizon, Chicken Shack and all that. I mean, they did their thing, but they all stopped at a certain point. And I tried, while writing my own material and tried to play modern music, I even at the expense of being unpopular, I tried to dig deeper and deeper, and that's the process I'm going through at the moment. I'm trying to find out, like, the blues isn't just B.B. King or all the popular people like Albert Collins or Albert King. There are a lot of fantastic players and singers and so on in there. It's just a great hobby for me. I'm not making a big professorship out of it, but I think that it's more than just playing a few Freddie King numbers or being on Blue Horizon, with all due respect, you know?
Yeah, because, like, back in 68 direction, say, with all these, the Blues Breakers and all those sort of, the Chicken Shacks, etc. I mean, if Fleetwood Mac were at the forefront of that, I get the impression that like Fleetwood Mac being Mick Fleetwood, say, and John McVie, that's how they got their name, the bass player and the drummer. Now, they're still the mainstay of the band. They still give the band a good sound, regardless of what you might think of the pop songs they've been making. But, I mean, like, I get the impression those guys, like, since Rumours hit big, say, 10 years ago, and they became millionaires, and they're huge, and they've relocated to California. I get the impression that those two guys are just laughing at the whole thing, that like they don't really mean this at all, and like their roots are really still back in the marquee and that, and that's what they'd rather be doing.
Well, I don't know, but the proof is in the eating. I mean, if you heard their new record, you can't seriously give these guys medals. I mean, it's a con. I mean they're nice guys, and maybe they play the odd blues record at home, but that's, I'll probably get knifed in the alleyway after this, but I mean, that's precisely what I wouldn't want to become, you know, with huge albums like that. It's nothing. They should change the name of the band. Let's be honest about it.
Because it was really Peter Green's band, if you think about it, I suppose.
Well, the music to play, I'm not saying that you can't change over the years, but it's totally different from, it's like if you took, I don't know, let's say the Dubliners brought out a heavy metal album and went, and went a million miles away from the folk or traditional music they play. You couldn't really call it the Dubliners anymore. I know that sounds a bit catty, but I think, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not knocking Fleetwood Mac as such, but yeah. I think that's, they've gone the full entire cycle. I don't know, that new stuff they do, it's just Cinzano music, you know, it's just...
Yeah, Cinzano music. Well, then what about early in the 70s again, when you won all the readers' polls in the magazines as the best guitarist in the world and that? Is that sort of thing where you cringe more than you feel flattered by it, do you think?
Well, you have to be absolutely honest. I mean, it's a good buzz to think that a lot of fans think of you and you get in the polls somewhere. But against that, then after you've been in the polls for the first year or two, it's every poster, that every gig you do, the promoters immediately put, you know, the greatest guitarist in the world playing next Tuesday, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Segovia maybe was the closest to it, but I mean, you can't. And then it becomes like the Leopardstown Chase. You know what I mean? Who's the top? It's you know, polls of any kind. I mean, they're only some kind of vague popularity thing. They've nothing to do with. Mm. Like, you couldn't spend your life looking at every poll that comes out, because you go crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Contacts broken down. Time drags by. I'm above suspicion. There's a voice on the telephone. Burn on slow.
one of the things Rory is big time into, American crime stuff and Dashiell Hammett and Philip Marlowe characters and stuff like that. That's Kim Philby as well. In fact, we go back to the 88 interview. It's 20 years today since Rory died. I remember the day, it was a really sunny day in 1995. He was 47 years of age. And he's one of the nicest guys you could ever possibly meet. He shunned the kind of old-fashioned, cliched rock and roll lifestyle. No possessions, no property, cars, trophy guitars, or girlfriends, wife, kids, no family. For Donald, his brother. And Donald, his brother, has said, like, he's never had a proper kind of heart-to-heart with him in his whole life. Not a kind of a happiest of endings for Rory, really, in so many ways. Bit of a lonely man, and fantastic, and one of the nicest guys you could ever meet, frankly. Well, I remember being asked at the end of the 80s, what's the best thing about being on Radio 2 or 2FM? Out of doubt, no question. Christmas card 6 years in a row from Rory Gallagher. Beat shagging, that I can tell you. I have the T-shirt to prove it and I still have the cards. You can't get better. Anyway, I'm going to go back into this too because that's Philby's talking about there. I'll just press the button anywhere here and see where we go with this. Oh yeah, I think we get a live... Oh yeah, at the end of this we get a live track in the studio. He just kind of plugs in and off he goes. It's fantastic. But anyway, before all these, I think it's this bit. We backed out. There was a different song that we were down from the album from 88 there. But let's just talk about Dashiell Hammett stuff. Hold on.
Are you still reading those books? And
oh yeah. Well, I'm a great fan of his. I've read a few biographies on his life story, but it's just that particular character he writes about is really ideal for a song because he's very pushy and vain, and he's not a bit high-minded as a detective, you know. Other songs, I say on the Jinx album, I had a song called "Big Guns," which is more of a petty crook who was caught between the mob and the law, so he'd nowhere to run. And then there was odd other songs. Let me see. Well, "No Peace for the Wicked," that song is also kind of a law and order.
What about Philby? You can't bring that into that, yeah?
Well, you can. As if, I was reading, like, from the sort of the heart and soul of Philby, as opposed to the espionage thing. Just how he must have felt.
Yeah.
I was trying to live through the character, but I mean, it's without getting too highfalutin about it, you know. Philby's still a very interesting character. He still shows up in the press now and then with some new twist, and they're always reappraising whether he's a double agent, whether he wants to come back, whether he doesn't, what's he doing in Moscow, all that kind of thing. He moved from Moscow lately, actually. He's gone upmarket to Leningrad or somewhere.
Because the funny thing about that song, Philby, I would have thought that that was one of the most commercial things you ever did in terms of really great radio play. It's still requested all the time. Did you think it was going to be a hit? And you think that was the one that might have done something in terms of just a bit more of that sort of publicity?
Yeah, well, if we were very calculated and we waited a few months just before the Anthony Blunt scandal broke.
Yeah, I remember
that time. And it had a nice little sleeve, and it was one of those songs where... even though I'm sort of anti-single and all that kind of thing, it really wouldn't have hurt my conscience too much because I was proud of the song and the production and the whole thing, and I don't think it would have been a sellout type of thing.
Yeah.
And there hadn't been a song like it around, in my humble opinion. But unfortunately, it got a bit of airplay, but vanished again, unfortunately. Yeah.
Would you still be anti-single in the late 80s as it was sort of the vogue of a lot of bands in the early 70s?
Well, a lot of my phobia about it is it's not being anti. I mean, if I made a good song and it got onto the turntables of various shows and it got into the charts, it wouldn't hurt me too much. But what happens is that you get lectured by people, or you know damn well that it's not, no matter what you do. And then you go off like a lot of artists that I used to admire, and they make a real little frilly song just to get in the charts. And they put pay then to like 18 years of credible work. That's what...
It just takes away from it.
It does indeed. Yeah. And I'd rather never have a hit single, and if I had to do sort of Three Blind Mice type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, if you look at all the blues artists or whoever... Most of their hits, like John Lee Hooker or any of those guys, they were singles. I mean, Boom Boom, any of those. Chuck Berry's work was all singles, really. He had albums, obviously, but it was... Even Muddy Waters' career was... he had a few hit singles in a certain market, you know?
You certainly never go out of your way to, in inverted commas, record a single.
No, not really.
Okay, well, listen, you're going to do something now for us, then. Okay, you can make your excuses and tell us what it is as well, because the floor is yours now, live Rory Gallagher, and we're coming up with the news soon, so don't make it a 20-minute track. Do what you like.
38 minutes, so... This is a Want Ad Blues is the name of the song. John Lee Hooker recorded it. It's written by some guy called Boyd. I'm not sure if it's Eddie Boyd or whoever. I'll have a bash at it anyway. Okay.
Not even going over to Studio 8, just stand up, do it, plug it in. Wilson puts on a little bit of the old reverb, a little bit of the old echo, and off he goes. That's Rory Gallagher live in this very studio, actually. Or maybe it's the one next door, I can't remember. Anyway, we're back to 88 with all this. Rory died 20 years ago today, in the middle of June 1995. I'll give you another little bit from that interview. This is kind of, I suppose, a bit towards the end. I've just got it all in bits here. No idea what I'm going to hit here, but let's see what happens.
When the album is out. And of course...
By the way, if he's mentioning dates, they're all from 1988.
Getting the album sorted out, just delayed. The next thing you knew, it was 5 years, which is a shame, you know.
Yeah.
But there you are.
Because you say you had that Torch album and that you've also recorded 20 tracks for Defender. Now, you get 12 tracks altogether on Defender, 10 on the album, 12 on the CD, and the extra two are free with the album and a single. Now, of those 12, I mean, was that 20 you made for just Defender, in other words? In other words, are you writing songs all the time? Have you got so many you can afford to just cop out a whole album?
More or less. A lot of songs go by the wayside that... you know, come to life again, you know, because you play them too fast or use the wrong key. Like some songs have to go away and fester. I mean, Philby would be an example of that. That was recorded, for instance, like in and around, we say, the Calling Card album, and then it was left alone for 2 years, and then it all came together on the Top Priority album. Mm. So it doesn't mean it's not valid, but a lot of good songs sometimes take a couple of years to grow, you know.
Yeah. Do you know that thing about like black blues musicians who have as much credibility as they ever had when they're 60 and 70 and more? Do you think that with the way you've done things, it's helped with the fact that in 20 years' time, Rory Gallagher will still be doing the same thing and it'll be complete credibility because of that? As opposed to some bands who will just have to stop at a certain age because it'll just look even more ridiculous than it does with some of them at the moment.
Well, I don't know. It's you know, I can't go on sort of saying things that are like big lofty statements that, you know, I'm more credible than somebody else or whatever. It's just that for my own hobby, when I'm 60 odd or whatever it is, I'll be playing blues material at home and I'll still be enjoying it just like a traditional musician would, which is a different thing from, you know, playing with a band and doing gigs and all that. It's just you know, it's just an interest for me, like flamenco music or something, you know. But I think the blues, what makes it more important than some music is that it gets right into your veins as a kind of, not as a lifestyle and as a mind, as a little beacon in your life, you know.
Yeah.
God almighty, that's very profound, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you were down home in Cork last night and you say you were listening to the programme and you heard me playing a new one from George Thorogood. Well, yeah. I mean, from a new album, certainly not a new song, Smokestack Lightning. Mm. What do you think of him, like, who covers all his albums with so many of the blues classics? He doesn't seem to necessarily write an awful lot himself.
No, I read an article and he said that all the great songs have been written, which is, gets him out of all scrapes. I think on one album he did write one or two things, but I think he's nifty. He's a good guitar sound and he performs well, but I wouldn't like to be just covering numbers. John Hammond is another blues artist who, you know, I admire, but it's important to try and develop outside just being an interpreter of the blues, put it that way, you know.
Yeah. Well, then one last thing is this, and that is that, do you think that down through the years, in particular I would say around the time of the Deuce album, Blueprint, Tattoo and those albums, do you think that in many ways a lot of the songs in those albums were overlooked, that people overlooked the fact that Rory Gallagher writes great rock songs? And you can be as modest as you like here, right?
Well, I'd like to think some of them were overlooked, certainly. I mean, because I put a lot of effort in them, and some of them stand up quite well today.
Yeah.
But that's the luck of the draw, you know.
The luck of the Irish. Okay, well, listen, Rory, thanks very much indeed for dropping in again. It was great to have you back.
It's
and
pleasure.
The best of luck in the with the Irish tour over the next few days at the Olympia in Dublin until Saturday, and then Belfast, Limerick, Galway, and Cork all next week. And I hope you have a very good time on stage and come back to us next time as well.
Well, indeed.
And in 20 years' time, I want to read your biography as well, just like Chuck Berry, because you'll be the same age as he is now in 20 years.
I won't, actually. That's
wait a second.
It's a mistake.
Let's get this one right?
It's all 60s.
Were you not born in the beginning of March?
1948, no? Let's put it this way. I won't be 62 in 20 years' time, contrary to a certain...
Well, in 22 years' time. Yeah, I saw Gay Byrne last Friday night saying that to you, all right?
I don't know where he got his mathematics, but that's okay. You know, I mean, I might be 92, who knows? You know?
Yeah, all right, fair enough. So it won't be the same sort of Chuck Berry sort of thing. There won't be any great sort of backstage stories, no?
Not as crazy as his stories, but it might be fun at that stage, though, because, you know, if you've been around a few places and met a few people and have a little story to tell, it could be interesting. Yeah. If you don't take it too seriously, but yeah. I mean, that's probably what Chuck wanted, just a light-hearted book.
That's what he gave us. Okay, well, Rory, thanks very much indeed, and the best of luck to yourself and Brendan and Jerry as well. Okay, well, by the river, down in the lowland, the night there's no safe place to stand. Little reeds arise and peak, voices I can't understand. Flamingos playing endlessly into the silent sky. Yeah.
mama before you walk the swamp. Learn to make that snake tail stew from your daddy crazy talking fisherman. In this place there is no law, the river makes all the rules. What they are I found out when I came.
Stuff there from 1988, just bits of an interview. Was in for about 90 minutes on the programme. I just sort of dipped in and out. That is Rory Gallagher, who died 20 years ago today, and that's Daughter of the Everglades from the Blueprint album.